Welcome to this session about APIs. And I want to stress that above all, it is about APIs. So when it has in the title, and what is coming, it is about APIs. And for the rest, you have to go back to the keynote. My name is Albert Kooijman. I work in the Link marketing team. Someone made a joke that if you would dig up a mummy and the first question about UC would be, is Albert still around? It would be most likely that he would know me, because I've been doing APIs in our team since the very beginning. We created a marketing team, so that's for quite a while. I'm here together with David Newman, who will help me with demos. Typically, when I start speaking, the front row starts betting on whether David will get on stage at all, because I have a lot to tell. But we are hopefully going to be able to, at the end of the presentation, illustrate a lot of what I'm telling, also with actual demos. There are also other sessions about platform, especially when it comes to the Skype and Link integration. I would like to recommend the session that actually says how to make Skype and Link integration work in the contact center. That will be later this afternoon and is presented by Philip Beck. With that said, I would like to start with when I joined our marketing team, the Unified Communications Marketing Team. I think it was 2006 that it was formally constituted. I worked on it more or less since 2002. We actually started with a vision. And in the vision, as I have displayed here on the slide, we actually set out on a dream that I believe is about to become real. We are reaching a tipping point in which real-time communications will be able to be embedded in any application possible. And that tipping point is not only because unified communication as software is getting more and more prevalent, but it's also because the technology, on the technology side, there is more and more agreement among all the different players who are playing in this market how to make this work. And I will come back to that in a moment. But when you're talking to us, when you're talking to Microsoft, and the charter of all the colleagues that I'm working with when it comes to Link is essentially to see Link as a platform. And that platform is consumable in applications that are your line of business applications or are your customer care applications, are running not only on a desktop, but are also running on mobile devices, are running on tablets, and not only in the form of the client that we write as Microsoft, but also as what is your incarnation of that. And in order to understand why I said that we are at the tipping point, I would like to actually go back and visit that mummy and talk about when we started, what was the philosophy that we as a product embraced? And I still remember that because I was part of it when Microsoft started thinking about how to enter into the telephony world. Twice a year, Bill Gates would come to your group and would do a Bill G review. And the proposal that was put on the table was very much to address the following problem. People were working behind their PC, and the phone would ring, and they would swivel away and pick up the phone and start talking. To bring those two together in 2001, 2002, you needed to think about two different worlds. And there were a lot of attempts earlier in the 90s, like TAPI, on how to effectively bring telephony signaling and how to bring CTI, computer telephony integration, to life. However, in that particular review, it was Bill Gates himself who said, I don't like anything of what you're proposing, where you are essentially going to copy a PBX. Voice over IP is not good enough. He said, he literally asked the group, what is your strategy? And I repeat that because no one in that room could answer him. And at that very moment, he got very agitated and he said, what is our strategy? And then he answered himself, our strategy is software. The most funny part came shortly thereafter, because then he asked, and what is our strategy 5 years from now? And the answer was more software. I'm repeating this because, and Gurdip called this out in his keynote yesterday as well, to just do voice over IP by itself was not good enough. We effectively want, and that is the tipping point on which we are, we want to make real-time communication a feature that can be consumed in any type of piece of software that is being written. Now, in those days, the world was relatively simple because it was 90%+ that was on Windows. And currently, we are going to live in a world that is more diverse. Like next year, there is about 300, 400 million Windows devices shipping. But there is 1.4 billion Android devices shipping. And I do not even talk about all those iThingies out there, but there's a lot of them. So we are living in a more heterogeneous world. But the point is not less relevant for those devices as it is for the Windows devices. And that's also what Gurdip tried to stress yesterday when he asked, hey, how many millions of clients are you shipping on those other platforms? So we started off with this paradigm of communications as software. And we had the luxury, indeed, of starting from scratch. So what is important to realize is that we had the freedom to effectively bring the communications modalities under one head, under one common denominator. And that, in 2006, in October 2006, Microsoft, for the first time, used the word unified communications in the press release. I know this because I was the one who wrote that press release. It was about the sunsetting of the IVR that we had built, the speech server. And the sunsetting was actually, we are going to build IVR capabilities in our APIs of the unified communications platform. And Gurdip had the freedom, effectively, to build with LCS and with OCS a product. A product that was capable of effectively using whatever modality was the most opportune at the right moment. That was the breakthrough that we had when we started launching OCS 2007. We brought this product to market, and we're very happy. As marketeers, we could not be more delighted because the attention for our product was gigantic. However, in the market, it was not the huge success that we thought it would be. And the reason was because at an enterprise show that was there, it was at that point in time called VoiceCon. Now it's called Enterprise Connect. When we were measured up against other PBXs, OCS did not really fulfill all the features that they had in their sample RFP. And everyone started doubting, is this product actually ready for telephony? So between 2007 and 2010, a large portion of our engineering force was reassigned to essentially add those features with regards to telephony. And so we more or less started also promoting our product very much as a PBX. And I'm saying that because at that moment, I believe, personally believe, we almost threw away the baby with the bathwater because Link is not a PBX. And therefore, from a marketing point of view, slightly thereafter, we started realizing that, and we started emphasizing that the days are there where we need to actually think about communications not as a single telephone call or as an isolated phone call, but as something that indeed corresponds back to that vision that I outlined in the very beginning, namely that every application can benefit from communications. Every application can become an endpoint. Every application essentially has communications to support what the application wants, or what the user, to be very precise, wants with that application in productivity. So currently, we are very much back in promoting Link Server, as it's called now, as an enterprise communication and collaboration tool. Now, this was about 3 years ago that we arrived at this destination, and then all of a sudden, this world had changed around us. I already called out the giant amounts of devices that were no longer Windows devices. And we also actually found that the communications networks had changed rapidly. When we released our first mobile clients, do you still remember those? They were able to suck your battery within an hour. Yeah, and that's quite a problem, right? And if you were ever going through a dead spot in your network, you would be away forever. Because the disconnected experiences in a world, and both can be attributed to, in a world where SIP is dominant, SIP actually is not the best protocol, the best signaling that you actually can have when you're talking about communications over a data network where you do not always are connected, where you're not always connected to that network. In a device that actually should consume only battery when there is literally something going on. Not like SIP, like, hello, here I am, okay. Okay, we have changed the status of this person, okay. No, in Link, in the mobile client of the Wave 2, what you see there is that when you open a contact to start IMing with that person, it will actually then check what is the latest information we have around the present state. If you are scrolling through the buddy list, the contact list, at that very moment, it will retrieve the present states of those people that you're looking at, not of the 500 or more people that I have on my contact list. So in other words, we effectively started making a transition to something else than SIP. And that was actually, on the platform side, something that was extremely significant. Because if you have to rethink your platform from moving away from SIP to something else, we effectively embraced the era of what we called at that point in time the real-time web. Effectively, we concluded that if we really want to start scaling, if we want to, because at that time we started planning with hundreds of millions of Link users, and especially we started planning for a service that could support hundreds of millions of users. If you really want to scale, and if you really want to use technology on the signaling side that doesn't drain your battery, optimizes for connected experiences, if you want to start really truly embedding communications in any application, to move away from SIP and to move away from essentially a protocol abstraction in code that was as it was, we would not get far. We effectively decided 3 years ago to completely rethink how we do communications by embracing the web. And the first incarnation where you're talking about APIs that you could effectively see was in Link 2013. In CU1, we introduced the Unified Communications Web API. Now, what is so unique about the Unified Communications Web API is that it abstracts all the signaling away in essentially HTTP requests. It's a REST-like interface. And that REST-like interface is much more appropriate for effectively doing stuff over a data network on the one hand side, but is also very easy to consume on any type of OS, on any type of device, to build it into any type of application. And that was the vision on which we set out. So we embraced the whole transition from going from one protocol paradigm to a paradigm that essentially embraces the web. Now, you cannot do that overnight. Yes, with the mobile clients we did, but we still have a lot of SIP. So if you are looking at it, we essentially are now in this world of transition. On the client side, we have released the Unified Communications Web API, but we don't have the equivalent yet on the server. But the most of the motion, actually, at this point in time, is about clients. What is the biggest buzzword? What is the biggest buzzword that you have currently in real-time communications? It's WebRTC. So I actually want to take a slight detour before concluding my story and before David and I are going to do some demos, because I do want to actually explain a few things about WebRTC. If you are looking at our API approach, it was always to make life easy for developers and essentially offer you with an SDK or with APIs that essentially abstracted away multiple things. On one hand side, you had the protocol. Then, of course, you have media and the codecs. Then you have got signaling. You've got how to sign in. And that would talk to a Link server or a Link service, Link Online. And at that very moment, when you are realizing that when we are talking about our reality is essentially you build your apps on top of whatever API we offer, and then all that complexity about signaling, protocols, and media, and auth, they are essentially abstracted away from you. So if you're looking at all the motion that we had around the Link client, essentially you've got the Link client 2013 managed API. And you were able to write your application on top of that. We are going to do some demos of that in a moment. And you would not need to worry about protocols, media, and signaling. With the UC Web API, that's actually not much different. It is a client API at this very moment. And this client API essentially abstracts away the protocols and the media and the signaling and the auth. Now, I told you, if you want to continue writing apps that actually work with the Link XE, with the one thing that runs on your Windows desktop, you use the Link 2013 managed API. The brilliant thing, however, of this thing that we have here, this UC Web API, is essentially it could run on any application, or on any device, on any operating system. Because we actually have libraries that take the protocols and the media. We have this UC Web API signaling protocol that we have specified, and we have specific ways of how to sign in that essentially allow you to port that to any device in any operating system. You, of course, will need those protocols and media abstracted away in a library. Now, what many people confuse when they are talking about WebRTC is that in WebRTC, there are essentially the same components. When they talk about WebRTC, they very often confuse that there are two layers, or actually there are three parts that constitute WebRTC at this point in time. In the RTC Web IETF working group, people work around the protocols, work about standardizing the protocols. Then there's a whole discussion in both groups, both the W3C and IETF, about media. And then there is what I would call, as a Microsoft biased person, the complete chaos about how to abstract that away in an API. Because if you're looking at it from a perspective of where there is agreement, and that is actually constituting the tipping point in why WebRTC is going to be real, is because there is agreement among all the different parties, more or less, but close enough, on how to make the protocols work and how to make audio work. We have agreed essentially on what are the things that actually are the common denominator among all the different players, whether this is Google, Microsoft, whether this is Cisco. We more or less are in agreement about what are the protocols. We all have agreed on that Opus and G711 are the two media codecs that we are going to use for audio. The world is still very split about what media to use for video. And there is some first dabbling about, OK, what do we do for remote desktop or application sharing? But you can see that in order to build a solution, there are still a lot of areas that need to be agreed on before this is taking place. There is, however, a great precedent over and over again that once parties agree on what protocols to use, that this will actually change the world. The biggest example that I have lived through myself was when, in networking, we actually started embracing sockets. So TCP IP, let's call it like that. The moment that I actually found out that I could install a WinSock DLL and start switching to TCP IP, that was effectively the moment that Novell, with their networking, started dying. Anyone could actually start networking in a very simple way. And the same is actually happening now on the real-time communications point of view. The one thing, however, that I want to call out is that when it comes to what WebRTC is going to be able to offer, it is a common denominator. It is what essentially the min bar you need to communicate from one to the other. And I would like to express that, make that a little bit more explicit as well, because most of the implementations work if you connect one client directly peer-to-peer to the other client. Now, maybe this is a little bit too much technical stuff, but realize that when we are talking about WebRTC and how to make communications work, we built an API. We built an API on which you built your application, and you have never, when you worked with Microsoft, needing to care about what was the protocol that is underlying, what was the codec, what was the way how you essentially do video or audio or app sharing. You essentially just said, start call. And that is when you are talking about what is our strategy as Microsoft, is essentially to give developers that ease of use. When you are able or willing to connect your application to our world, that's to say the world of a Link server, to a Skype cloud, to Link Online or to Office 365, you build on our API and what goes on under the hood, you do not want to care. And the reason for that is as well because if you are looking at this diagram, WebRTC by itself takes care of a small portion of everything that you need in order to build a complete solution. I already spoke about signaling. Some people will embrace SIP. Other people will embrace, like us, HTTP. Maybe they are using XMPP and Jingle. It is going to be depending on which cloud or which other site you would like to connect to, what the other component is with regards to signaling. If you are signing in or if you want to find people in a directory, it is going to be dependent on which cloud or which other client you want to connect to in order to make it work. So this whole hype about WebRTC is essentially something that, yes, it is going to push forward real-time communications truly in every application. But the thing that we as Microsoft have as a strategy is actually moving forward with the strategy that we had 10 years ago, and that is building APIs. And on top of those APIs, you can build your app, and you do not need to worry what's under the hood. Of course, if you are looking at this diagram, that also means that we are not only talking about Link server, but we are also talking about the cloud. And if you are going back to the title of my talk and what is coming, I want to actually call out that we have started working now since a year on also the other side. Tony Bates, in his talk last year, he spoke about B2X. We believe as Microsoft, and we are actually inspired by most of our customers, that one of the scenarios that people would like to fulfill is not only that people can talk to each other peer-to-peer, but that people actually can talk as a consumer or as another business to a business. So in other words, the connection needs to be made from those clients, from those endpoints, to essentially the people who are connected through that same service. Now, if you are talking about what we are doing there as Microsoft, we are effectively extending our platform on the server and service side with a unified communications as a service service. This is hard to, or we call it internally the Unified Communications Application Platform, or UCAP. What does this mean? It means essentially that you can start building applications that do not necessarily need to be on the same data center or in the same data center as where the server or service is hosted. And that means that if you are now talking about the future, we believe that there will be a lot of applications, especially when it comes to connecting people and routing and essentially powering not only customer care, but also gaming or dating or sex or, but you understand, there's a whole list of potential things that can be done if you are able to essentially decouple what I would call the plumbing and the data center in such a way that it doesn't matter in which data center you host your application. And in that context, what is important to realize is that where we chose HTTP as a protocol to go from essentially the client to the server, that is the same foundation on which we are building our unified communications platform on the service or server side. Does that mean actually, and I've heard this now because I've been talking about this for a little while now, that many people are then, oh, does that mean that my contact center will stop working because I'm using the UC managed API in the server? I try to express this in this slide. If you look at the bottom of this slide, you have to realize that inside Microsoft, everything that we do effectively is built on this UC managed API. And this UC managed API is a server-side API that therefore will not go away. The only option that you will have that is additional in the foreseeable future is that you will be able to put your application, your ACD, or your contact center, or your, you name it, it will be possible to actually put that application not next to the server, but connect to us via HTTP from your own data center. The world in the future, is my prediction, will be very much divided among networks. If you are building an application, I already said that for us, it will be realistic to say that when you start building an application, you build the application on our APIs because you want to connect to our server or our service. There's also a good reason for that, not only because the signaling is defined by us, but it's also because you will try to find people. Essentially, what is happening now is that after you had the fixed telephony, after you had the mobile telephony, there is now what I would call the internet telephony era that is starting. And the internet era of telephony is essentially a paradigm in which communications are going over the data network. Now, telcos are having their own thoughts about what that should look like. You will hear a lot in the future about voice over LTE, or you will hear about, oh, it needs to be IMS compliant. But then I want to refer back to where I started, when Bill Gates said, no, we don't want to imitate a telephone. Essentially, what we are doing with our platform is, no, we don't want to imitate the old world. We want to essentially make communications a feature in whatever experience you would like to create. And I will give, in a moment, some examples of that. Now, you are going to essentially log in into this new network. And it will be, therefore, extremely important to actually find other people. Or, if you're looking at it from the opportunity of Link and our commitment to interoperability, to also communicate with the older style networks. Now, how do we do that in Link Server? You have gateways, right? Or you have SIP trunking. You are able to connect to all the old world as well. However, and this is very much like in Exchange. I always use this analogy because in Exchange, we are communicating through SMTP. However, if you are communicating at Exchange proper, just from one user on Exchange to the other, you have all those other APIs. So you have the, let's say, the common denominator and the essentially the strategy around that on the outside, and we have the opportunity to essentially innovate a lot more. Now, if you don't want to find people who are on your network, you will understand that the directories that are being built at this very moment around Facebook, around Google+, those are the directories of the future. That's essentially your phone book of the future. So it's now also more easy to understand why we bought a company like Skype. Because in our world of Microsoft, there are hundreds of millions of users on Skype, over 300 million, Kudeep outlined. There's over 100 million Link users. There are about 300-400 million Outlook.com users. There are so many Microsoft account users. There are many, many people on Active Directory. The one thing that Google actually does that I admire is they actually more or less are giving up a bit of your privacy to to enable, when you are in Google Apps, to collaborate with any point in time with anyone who is signed in with their Google account as well. So in other words, when you're talking about, okay, what are we trying to do? We are effectively trying to offer you a communications network with which you can collaborate with other people who are in this world of Skype, of Link, of Microsoft. Or as Gudeep called it out yesterday, we are trying to build a universal communications network. And anyone who will be inside our network will get very rich experiences. Not the common denominator, but very rich experiences. If you're not in the network, just like we have now with the Link meeting, you can still dial in with your traditional phone. So there will be a lot of interop from our side, with which we essentially be able not only to dial in via your phone, but connect also to, let's say, for example, legacy VTC systems when you're talking about Link room systems. So with this, you now better understand what is the philosophy for us as a platform, and what are the transitions that we are going through. A major part I did not say explicitly, but I mentioned it briefly when I spoke about B2X. This is not only a communications network that is just for the enterprise, but is essentially going to span both, essentially the whole, your whole personal world with your enterprise or business world. It's not only going to be relevant for people in the top of the pyramid of very large enterprises, but also is going to be relevant for the mid-market and for the small and medium-sized businesses. It's going to be relevant for people who are having a hockey club or a football club or whatever, because essentially we are connecting people, and it is the apps that will make the difference. In every app that you can build, you now can, and that is the thing that we try to show in Derek Burney's keynote, and we will show a little bit more elaborate in a moment. We want to essentially enable communications in any app. So now, David, I would like to invite you up to our screen, to our stage. Let me actually start. Oh, sorry. Still not time for you.
Oh, okay.
Hey, yeah, when you start doing demos, right, it's always very, very difficult to explain everything that is going on. So actually, I once had a manager. And I had this 40-page slide deck, and she said, before I started, I can only remember three things. Can you whittle it down to three things, please? That's marketing in extreme, right? So I started thinking about it. How can I actually speak about APIs and demos? Well, if you are looking at applications, there are three things from a business perspective that you can do with it. You can optimize the communication between people. You can have a machine reach out to a person. And you can have a person speak to a machine. So any demo that we are going to do in a moment are actually fitting in those three pillars. Some smart people say, what about one machine communicating to the other machine? Yes, also that can be done. It's, however, not part of our talk here. We actually do have references there because if you're talking about, for example, this acquisition that Google or Apple, who did it from Next, or those thermostats, that's essentially the ability to start talking from one to another, right? So we did with a German energy company, they actually used Link to communicate with their with the houses to do smart lighting and smart energy management, to essentially use Link as the backbone of communicating. So the communication of things is coming. However, I don't have any compelling demos with me here. Now, I'm actually then sneaking in a little bit more, right? So this lady could only remember three things. So I started thinking, well, if you're now talking about communications from one person to the other person, what are the things that you actually can do? Well, there are three things again, because she gave me only the restriction of three things. So you can actually change your presence. So if I go to my desktop, let me see if I have here somewhere. So we have built this little utility. Let me see if I can make it work. With which you actually, many people do not realize, you can customize presence. So if you are looking in a Link client, right? So here I've got Link client. Do I have a Quimen in here? No, I don't. But let me actually add myself. So here, am I there already? Add to my favorites. Let me Let's see, where am I now? In the other contacts? Oh, here I am. But this most likely is, I'm offline. Oh no, this is another Albert. I have got many identities. Nevertheless, let's do it. Like, for example, I'm going to do demos. I cannot set myself to do not disturb because then no communication goes through anymore. But if I, for example, Kai is always playing the drums. So if I look at Kai, let me see if, oh, there's Albert. V-Kaister. Oh, here he is at Microsoft.com. Oh, I am actually, sorry, I make Kai play the drums now, but I actually can essentially set myself to do not disturb presenting. And now, because I'm not in the right privacy group, it changes to busy. But if I set myself to available, I can publish myself as available, and doing demos is here. All right, so you can set presence. That's the first capability that you have. You also can, of course, light up the click to communicate. So let me actually give you a small example of that. So here, for example, I'm using the link managed API, and I can essentially build into my application here in this browser Silverlight application, I can build in the buddy list of Tosh. It's the same buddy list by using a control that has those same users. So I just added Albert Koyman. So here, indeed, there's Albert Koyman as well. And I can make that specific to projects as well. So if I look at this particular project, this is the project team that I have here. And here you can actually see the status is available type high. So if I actually would like to talk to Emma, for example, and I start an IM with her, and it always comes up behind here. Where's Emma's window here? Oops. Let me see. Let me go here. Here's Emma now. See this string here? It's customized. Type hi to start me, and as if I say hi, you actually will see the status to busy helping a customer. So that's the second capability. You can customize the presence. However, what was the brilliant thing that I'm doing here is that actually when I now want to talk to that other person, I do not only say hi, but given the fact that I started this application from within that context of that line of business application, I'm actually able to show what is on that web page for that other person. So if you look at this diagram, the other person will actually see that because that was exactly what I was looking at here as well. This one doesn't go away. Come on, move. But you can see here, same bubbles on the receiving end, sorry, will be there as well. So you can transmit context. That's the second capability that we have in this people-to-people communication. Now, where is this something that is useful? It is extremely useful if you're going to contact center, right? So let me actually demonstrate that. Is it contact center? Yeah, here it is, store. If you are in a contact center environment, and I am ordering or I'm looking for this particular phone, you can actually make a link by next to any phone that is out there. Oh, the bot is getting a little bit impatient now. Are you still there? I'm going to say goodbye to the bot. And at this very moment, you see, by the way, the present state changes again, and I can close this window. Tosh is still busy, so. But if I'm interested in a particular phone, I actually can transmit immediately because I'm software to the other side. The C and the T on the computer and telephony integration have become the same. So with other words, if I click on this particular phone and I would like to chat with an expert and I'm logging in, I can put in my phone number here as well if I would like to have a callback, and I'm pressing OK, at this very moment it's going to log me in. And if I now actually am, so in a moment it's going to connect me with the ACD. It's a little bit slow, but Alex, can we do something about that, why it's so slow? But here we are. I always give the server the default, but it immediately knew that I was interested in a Nokia phone. And we are now waiting to be connected. And that's because our friend Tosh, who is the agent, is actually busy. So at this very moment, when I switch myself to available, immediately this contact center software is connecting with me, is asking me if I'm free to take this call. And the moment that I say yes, I can actually transmit the context about what the customer is asking me about. So the barrier between, on the one hand side, computer and telephony on the other hand side has essentially been taken away. That is the phone that I was looking at. And here you have essentially software, and I can say hi, and although I'm called Tosh here, it is abstracted away as the Meteo agent over here, and I can say hi back, and then I can say, you get it. Right? I will come back to this in a moment. Or actually, David will, if David will ever get a chance to demo. Sorry. Nevertheless, you see what you can do with this platform, right? So if you're talking about people-to-people communication, you can make it a lot richer. You can really, truly use this API framework that we have given you to essentially streamline that communication. I already showed you just a second ago that we also have the capability of doing bots. You saw me speak about that. We will, maybe now this is the moment that you should come and do your demo. But before he does, sorry. let me do one
keep
more
going,
thing.
Keep going. Yeah, I almost made it up. Almost.
No, yeah. Because many people now, when talking about contact center, right, you start dialing in into a contact center. And essentially, like, for example, if I were on Skype, right? Let me see if there is any IVR that I can call here. Is there a help desk here? Help desk is offline. Yeah, but it's offline, so this is not how it's supposed to be. So let me not call from... So if I call the help desk, let me see if I've got a help desk here. Help desk at Meteo. Like I said, there is a session later after mine. So if I call this help desk, this is my typical IVR experience, right?
Welcome to the help desk. What type of product do you need help with? Cell phones, laptops, or desktops?
Cell phones.
What brand of phones can we assist you with? HTC, Nokia, LG, or Samsung?
Nokia.
Please hold while we connect you.
Okay, you get it, right? This is my IVR. Isn't that the most horrible experience that you can have? So, and this guy, by the way, is still available. So we actually started thinking about some other things, right? So one of the things that we started thinking about is how can we make this faster? Now, you already know that we have this capability of bots. So when I actually say hi to this particular bot, instead of actually having to go through menu after menu, why don't we actually just go, well, first of all, you can see here there's a text opportunity that I have. So if I press 1, I can go to Windows. And then if I would press 2, I would go to Windows 8. But that's not really what I want. So what I wanted to show is this capability. You can actually just click on this. And in the moment that I press Word, I will actually go to, you will go to the help desk queue that is responsible for Word. So you, with those bots, you can make that interaction of a person speaking to an IVR a lot more effective. So maybe now it's time for you. Oh, by the way. Yeah, if you then actually take this, why would you have to do that in Link, right? So let me open another. You can do this as well in the website nowadays. So, and that's what David will demo in a moment in a more elaborate way. But here, I have no Link client installed. I go to a website, and if I have an IVR, I actually made it look like a dial pad on a phone. And if I've got a question about Windows, and I've got a question about Windows 8, shall I do that? Shall I click on here? Let me click on here for a moment. At this very moment, I actually am going to be connected with this ACD. And indeed, we can speed this up a little bit. We're finding an agent to speak with you just a moment ago. We found an agent. Join me when ready. I now need to, at this very moment, still with the current Link client, need to click on this thing. And by the way, is Tosh available? Oh, yeah. Tosh is being called now on the one hand side. This is the agent, by the way. So I joined the conference call. And if I now here as Albert going to join here, and I'm going to join this meeting, I'm signing in, and in a moment you will hear a lot of noise because I'm connected to myself.
Don't try this at home.
But this is what is possible with our technology at this very moment, right? This is nothing special. This is essentially using the Link web app to actually broker between an agent, Tosh was my agent, and the actual customer using the Link web app docked into your web page. But that is not necessary anymore, right?
Correct.
So now, David, maybe finally I'll hand it off.
All right. I made it up. So what we're going to demo here right now is should be pretty familiar to you from the keynote demo that Derek gave yesterday. So what we're actually going to be looking at is the new API that our platform team has built that's actually built on top of the UC Web API. And this is a JavaScript object model API that basically abstracts some of those signaling details of the UC Web API away so that you can do some of the similar functionality of UCWA with a few lines of JavaScript code. And also the additional feature and added value of that is now we've actually added hooks into the media so that we can do audio, video, and desktop sharing from within a browser application. So you kind of saw this. Albert can chime in too as we're going through. We'll take a little bit of a deeper look than we saw with when Derek went through the demo. But as you remember, the scenario was that I was a user or customer who was having some sort of ailment. So the example Derek gave was he had a hand pain. And you might think that you have to go into the ER to get this checked out. You're not sure if you should make an appointment with your doctor. Instead of doing that, what you might want to do is log into your favorite healthcare portal, with Metio Healthcare.
So let me stop there for a moment, right? Because no, it's
so close.
Yeah, so close. No, the reason why
I made the offer. It was
no,
more...
the reason why this is important is that you need to realize just a moment ago when I put on this diagram of what actually is all needed to make this work. One of those components was the whole authentication. And the one thing that actually is extremely important to realize is that we work effectively on two paradigms. Either you are essentially logging in into your organization with Active Directory or Org ID, or you can be a consumer connecting to the business. And when you are a consumer connecting to the business, we love it when you use, for example, the Microsoft account. However, our system is actually open with regards to auth to essentially use any auth provider that you like, whether this is your Facebook or whether this is Microsoft account, as long as we trust that auth provider. So just a moment ago, you logged in with?
My Microsoft account.
Your Microsoft account. This is not an Active Directory. This is a consumer connecting. However, you had on that previous screen,
let's go back.
You had the, you go back for me. You also let's had this here. Opportunity to actually sign in with business credentials. So, and then you would actually, of course, log in either into the service or you would log into the server, depending on what you have.
Right, so there, just to clarify that too, so there's no dependency on that Microsoft account, so I can actually just log in here now just using my Metio credentials that I've been given when I signed up to the website. So now when I sign in, I'm presented with this customized page with my information, but over on the right here, you see that we have this bot over on the side and we've received an IM. So this particular feature is two parts. The one part where we're actually showing this IM embedded within the browser web page is built on the UC JavaScript API, which sits on top of the UC Web API. So you've seen these capabilities before. So we have that same capability now in this new API to actually embed this now right within the web page. Now what's happening on the back end is that we actually have a bot that's built using the UC Managed API. So you can see when I actually interact with this web page.
And this is, that's why I showed just a moment ago this simpler form, right? So what is happening here is the same as what happened in that IVR. Essentially, what you're clicking here on the screen is synchronized behind under the hood with, okay, hey, what is the state of the dialogue that I am in? And this UC Managed API essentially allows you to build those dialogues with your customer.
Right. So the logic in the back end now is it, basically, when I go through, the bot is now prompting me with applicable information based on that contextual data of where I am in the web page. So what you're seeing here, like the bots that Albert was demoing earlier, except this time we're completely embedded within the web pages, they're asking me a couple questions about my condition. So in the IM window, I can actually just respond here. Respond yes. It's asking me another question, yes or no. I'll respond yes. And now, based off of that information that I'm entering, the web page is now updating based upon my answers. So all this contextual data about where I am on the website is now being stored. So when we get, before we go to the next step, first I'll also show that perhaps in this scenario, I'm reading these answers and I'm still not getting the answer that I want. What I can also do is just ask a question to this bot. So I'll just ask, what is carpal tunnel?
And this actually, by the way, is a whole paradigm that we are starting to explore. In Worldwide Partner Conference a few years ago, I actually showed how to integrate customer care with social media. But this is actually integrating it more with search. When you start thinking about it, too often, actually, an agent starts working on something and tries to solve a customer problem. And once the customer problem is solved, this feedback that you have actually of how to answer that specific question is not actually closed as a loop in going back. So what we actually have under the hood here is that whenever you start essentially learning from what the customer asked and what the golden answer is, we're effectively starting to give that whenever you contact that bot with that question and the bot sees that question again, you don't need an agent. Right. You essentially get the answer that was prepared by the agent from the last interaction when that question was asked. And then you effectively can start searching. So currently, our dialogues are very driven by ask something, give an answer. But that's not how you and I work. Whenever I have a problem, I actually take the error string or whatever I'm looking for. I go to my favorite search engine. Guess which one that is. And then I type that in. And I will get results. And that is the type of innovation, once you start marking this up, that is possible. And yesterday, in the Bing engine, Gudeep showed that exact feedback loop. So when you ask something, you can actually then have presented that Skype button. And you could go transmitting the context of what I have asked straight from a Bing search into an actual customer-agent interaction in your contact center. And that is the, essentially, herewith I give it back to you.
Oh,
but that's the promise
right. Of
what where we are taking this.
So just to add to that, at the end of the scenario, once we've actually had that conversation, on that piece, you can imagine that if it's a question that is, there's not a frequently asked answer already in the system for that. You can imagine on the agent side or the doctor, nurse, whatever the scenario is that they then now can enter that answer. And it's actually now into the system so that if somebody else now comes through and answers that same question, they can be redirected to the same frequently asked question page. So the next thing I want to point out here is that, and this is where we're kind of taking everything now to the next level, is that perhaps I'm still not getting the answers that I need from this web page and this information. What you can see down here is now I have some options down at the bottom. And what you'll see is there's actually this aggregated presence down in the bottom. So basically, that is an aggregated presence of, let's say we had an internal nurse network. And that's taking the presence of all those nurses. And in the back end, basically, is if any are available, what's going to happen is through the ACD system, we're going to actually route that call to the appropriate nurse that is available and that matches the skill set of what I'm searching. So if I click on chat with a nurse right now, and the way we've done it in this demo is that we're actually now connecting to a nurse who is on Skype. So I actually am going to play the nurse role also. So I have my Skype client here for the nurse. So I'm just going to answer that call. And so now we're actually now connected in a voice call through Skype with a nurse.
You hear the background feedback. Don't try it at home on one PC, but
right. For
demo purposes, it's clear that one is communicating with the other, and you hear the faint voice in the background. And what you saw here is essentially it doesn't look like the linked web app anymore, right? It is literally a little window for just making the call, and it has a little image of the person you're connecting with. And this is essentially only a few lines of code. That was that advantage that I spoke about. We effectively abstract away everything around signing, about signaling, around media, around all the protocols on how to traverse firewalls, et cetera, and how to do essentially that universal communications that Gurdeep stressed on how to bring the Skype world together with the Link world.
Right. And so with that also, too, is that you saw the IAM modality. The great thing about the JavaScript, the model API and the abstraction layer is that to add an IAM modality versus a video modality is still the same few lines of code. So that's, the value of having that abstraction layer, that I can easily just add additional modalities into my web page. So what I'm going to do, we can imagine the scenario now that the nurse likely could ask me a few triage questions about my condition. Before, this is a good step before I'm actually transferred to a doctor or an expert in this area. If the nurse can deal with the problem, then that's going to save us money rather than actually, you know, using up some of the doctor's time. So let's say for this scenario example, the nurse has decided, you know, I'm going to transfer you over to a specialist. So I'll now just end this Skype call that was happening. And now what's going to happen here is that this bot in the background is going to do a back-to-back call and basically now transfer the call over to a doctor who is actually on Link. So I'm now being connected to Chris Johnson.
And.
Ooh. And.
It failed.
Yeah, interesting.
Kai was not fast enough
Kai
to pick it up.
Kai was not fast to.
Call him again.
Let's try again. Perhaps he didn't accept quick enough. There we go.
There we go.
Perfect. Kai was just too slow over there to accept. So now you can see that we're basically now connected through this embedded video control. I can actually now start an audio video conference just directly from my web page without any dependency on the Link client. So you can see Kai, the doctor, over there. And then the last thing I wanted to add is you can imagine combining this scenario with that contextual data window that Albert was showing in our other demos in Link Client. So if Kai is a doctor over on Link Client, when we actually start this call, Kai would see an extension window to that conversation and actually be able to see my patient data and actually be able to see exactly that contextual data as I was going through the website and looking up things. So they right away has access to the data versus taking the time to actually ask those questions and go through. You can see the value of him just having that data all right in front of him.
And if you're now realizing that we are inside the network of Link, and we essentially are able to do audio and video, then the next logical question as well is, will you also be able to do, for example, desktop sharing or application sharing? And the answer to that is yes. Because although there is no common denominator in the whole standardization process about this, in this particular case, we are essentially inside the Microsoft network. And that is Link and Skype. And we, therefore, if we are now connecting to a Link end, backend, we actually have that sharing capability as well. So if you are talking about help desk scenarios, again, internally in your enterprise, the moment that you now say to your customer who is calling the help desk, can you share your screen? You know it's possible from within that web page.
Right. And for the healthcare scenario, you might imagine that as, let's say Kai is the doctor, wants to share his screen with me to show me a diagram. And if he's on his Surface Pro, he could annotate that diagram, and I can actually, you know, look on my screen and see the particular areas, just as if I was in the same room with the doctor and he was showing me some charts or diagrams.
And with that, you hand it back to me.
And with that, we'll pass it back to Albert.
Thank you. Let's actually go back to my screen, because I therefore said, okay, we are in this transition. Just a moment ago, I showed you this proposal tracker over here. And this proposal tracker was written in JavaScript. And that's interesting, but it's not too interesting, right? So If you are actually now talking about moving this to other APIs, this UC Web API, you can recognize it. Oh, this was fast, by the way. So all of a sudden, it gets faster how to sign in. You can actually see here now Kelly Crowd, and this is all now built into that, into HTML5 and JavaScript. So the moment that I would like to call the help desk, I actually just can make a call. Oh, error, media plugin not installed. That I should not, okay, I should stop this demo here. So of course it needs to have access to the media. But you can see here the technology that used to be dependent on Silverlight here can be completely ported to HTML, and you can set your status here, and you can do IAMs and those type of things. Now, just to illustrate one more thing. So if you are essentially saying, okay, hey, I'm building on top of this UC Web API and on the object model that you're giving me, and I have these video windows and so on, David just showed you on how you actually can connect if you are connecting to the link world. But what many people do not realize is what I tried to explain earlier is that if you are essentially having this API, you can be agnostic of what is the media stack underneath. So the demo that I would like to do in there, and again, don't try this at home, this, if you are in the world of just connecting two endpoints and you would like to leverage our sign-in and our signaling, and you would like to essentially sign in using those APIs but use a different media stack, I'm logging here in as user one, and I'm logging in here as user two, and you actually can see this is, again, my link client list. And the moment that I actually would like to talk to Ari, and then this time I'm not going to try a voice call, but I'm going to try a video call, and I click on this. This is actually using the Chrome built-in media codec. And on this side, I now get this pop-up. Would you like to accept this call? And I'm going to give it permission to use my camera. And I'm now literally connected from one user, Kelly, to the other user, Ari, using a completely different media stack. I want to be very clear about this. This only works from endpoint to endpoint. So this doesn't work with the contact center. Because if you're looking at all the developments that are going on the WebRTC side, they're all about peer-to-peer. And they're not about connecting a consumer to a business, a B2X scenario. So you can see there's lots of rooms and like a room for all kinds of things. And essentially, if you build on our APIs, we take you along the road of the things that are possible. Now, to finish with one last demo, I just showed you on how we can actually build help desk scenarios, right? So I spoke about here, this is our API philosophy. This is what we want to achieve. This is what the things are that are coming and that you will be able to take advantage of, especially when you listen to Gurdeep. He said, in one of the coming CU updates, we will give you this capability of doing audio and video in the browser. We will give you the capability of connecting to Skype. But I want to end actually with a demo that was shown maybe in another session so that you have seen it already before, but I think the impact of it is huge if you start using our APIs just as they are. And the application that I want to show is the internal help desk API that was built by our friend here. Where is he? Anyhow. If I now, in Microsoft, connect to the Microsoft Help Desk, you had that same window. Am I? Just wait. Be patient. Again, this window comes up in your link client. We ship this in the UCMA SDK, UCMA 4 SDK, and then our Help Desk people took this to the next level. So here are my tiles again. So if I've got a question about Windows, and that's operating systems, and I've got a question about Windows. Well, let's do Windows 8.1. I actually now can connect just by clicking on this phone support or on chat support, and I will get an agent who is knowledgeable about Windows 8. I do not only have this capability of doing this straight away, right? So when I actually now log in, I can actually see what are my open tickets. I have no idea what my open tickets are, but I will not go. Or what are the known problems with the stuff that is going on in our network? Again, I should not leave that open too long. But nevertheless, you can see here that with the APIs that we offer here and now in the link client that you know day in, day out, there's a lot of room for innovation and optimization for that whole workflow. So not only talking about futures, but about the here and now. These are things that actually are extremely useful. Now, I want to call out one thing more. I spoke about that how we are doing dialogues with customers are changing. Gudeep alluded to that the last 2 years he built this artificial intelligence platform with which he predicted that he can predict who you're going to call in the next 5 minutes. I want to start with something more simple. If I have a question about, like, for example, I can just type in natural language. And then we have this artificial intelligence platform that effectively can analyze what I said and try to map it to one of your queues in your help desk. So this is a complete parallel path. But these are the things, coming back to my slide deck, that are possible. When you're talking about what our options are, right? They're about making the communication between people more efficient. They're about actually connecting to human beings immediately. Delanda held a speech earlier where she started talking about what are all the business scenarios. We have, for example, a drilling company that drills tunnels. When that machine goes down, it costs thousands per dollars per minute that that thing is not drilling. When a spare part is arriving, you can immediately send a notification. The spare part is here. Build it into your machine. It cuts down this human latency. If you have travel approvals, you can immediately click on accept. And of course, the other way around as well. Once you start then dialing in, you can find the right person at the right time. And you can do that via web. You can do that via voice. You can do that via video. And we have the technology in our APIs to build all these things. If you therefore now go to our link catalog, to catalog.link.com, you will find over 100 applications that our partners have built. If you walk on our expo, you can find so many things that our partners have built. So I really advise you to see Link in a different light, namely that Link is a platform that truly helps you optimize business processes. And with that, I would like to actually go to a Q&A. I've got 6 more minutes. Any questions? So the question is about desktop sharing. In which direction does it work? Does it work from the agent to the consumer or from the consumer to the agent? We have a few bugs to iron out, but it's both ways. Next question. Anyone else? The question is, what is the name of the JavaScript API? I called it, as a marketeer with all my imagination, the Unified Communications JavaScript API. There are some other people who are actually saying, no, it's not an API, it's an object model. And you have to realize that because essentially the work that we have done at this very moment is indeed just an object model. So you still need to write your elements around it, what it looks and feels like. However, by the time that it's done, we actually will have controls that you, just like in the Link Managed API, the client API, you can just drag and drop into your code and reference, and then it pops up. So Derek called it during the keynote JLink. I call it the UC JavaScript API. It is actually a JavaScript object model. We will find the name when we release it. Can you find now any material about this API? Yes and no. Yes, you can find it if you are willing to join our, what we call TAP program, Technology Adoption Program. And in the Technology Adoption Program, the obligation that you enter is not only to keep your mouth shut about all the new things that we are doing, but also give us feedback on what you would like to have improved or what you found that does not work or how we can make your life easier. So that technology adoption program is actually led by David. So if you as an enterprise or as a partner are interested, you can actually contact David. And then we go through a little bit of paperwork, and then you can get access to these bits.
Yeah, I just have one. I don't think
we'll be able to get into catalog.link.com. Oh, would our license have expired? Which is a common thing nowadays. I am very bad at keeping track of that. So let me see how we spell catalog. So it's a different spelling of catalog, maybe. And if you would like to see the apps, so there's hardware here. You go here, and then you have apps for per business, per industry, for IT. Or if you go back, you can say, OK, I would like to go back to all apps. Go back. Choose the category on the right, or click here to see all apps. And this is retrieving 103, 5, 13. This is what we have. Yeah, so, go ahead.
And so if that's it, then really as a test, you essentially don't need anything to proof and test your environment because you're essentially running a standard web page as the link shared, as a screen shared that you're executing in this scenario. Is that what you would do when you're really going into production, or are there some other steps for taking this?
So the question is, if you would like to do, for example, a scenario like sharing, if you just turn on sharing, is that what you do, or do you need to, as an enterprise, to do more? Actually, you need to do quite a few things on the policy side. So what are you allowed to share, and what are the things, essentially, the people that you would like to share, and what are the types of sharing that we have? If you go to link, if I essentially would like to start a meeting, see who is online. Ben is online as well. Or Eric. Let's take Eric. So the moment that I go into a meeting, I have all those different modalities. So I can share my application. I can share my desktop. I can share my PowerPoint. All those modalities, with the exception, I think, of the whiteboard, are available in this API. So you essentially can do those things. You can actually define in your link settings what are the modalities that are available to that outside contact. So there's some policy stuff that you need to do.
And what is the status of Skype for sharing?
The status of
you don't have the person doesn't have to come in as a standard link conference web client. They can come in with the new Skype integrated.
So the question is about what about the modalities like sharing for Skype? And I only can say what we have actually said. So Skype actually calling link via voice or via video works at this point in time. So the scenario where you essentially use the Skype client as is, so the Skype client as an exe that you install in your Windows or on your Android device, et cetera, and you would like to essentially do sharing, it is not possible at this very moment. The question is, what is licensing like? I do not know. The official answer is, read the licensing guide. It truly is. The answer is the only answer. Licensing guide, when you start looking at it, and you need to look at it, of course, yourself, and then make up your mind what it actually says. But no, it's true. But effectively, what we have demonstrated in you is how we actually use this paradigm of a meeting. We call that a conference. So even our contact center is essentially a meeting. And you know that if you have guests in your meeting, at that very moment, those guests are licensed as a guest in those meetings and not as full licensed link users. So I think we charge an external connector for that, but that is about the most that I can remember. More details in the licensing guide. But essentially, you are a guest in a meeting. So when you are on this web page, now if you sign in, like what David did at a certain point in time with AD credentials, at that very moment, you have to pay a client access license for that user. And if you are using the modalities beyond or peer-to-peer voice, you are essentially using the meeting. You are also obliged to pay for the meeting license or for the voice license, or for whatever license is then appropriate. So it depends on the capability set. So as a guest, if you log in via your Facebook account, Microsoft account, et cetera, essentially it's that external user that you have, a guest user. If you are using your Active Directory credentials or Org ID, you have to pay a client access license. Any more questions? When does the API go public? The slide yesterday in Gudeep's keynote, where I saw this for the first time, said before the end of the year. It's ready when it's ready, right? Let's be very honest about this. You saw just a moment ago, I tried to make a call and it failed because there was some hiccup with the media. So there is still some work to be done. In this TAP program, we effectively are ironing out those bugs. And then what is committed is it will not be server vNext, but it will be a CU update release. You know that we're doing more and more through those cumulative updates, although it's a new feature. Any last questions? You still can. No one? And I would like to ask you to fill out the evaluation, please. No, what I essentially tried, in peer-to-peer, yes. Just a moment ago when I showed WebRTC, that one is actually using our signaling, but it's using the media stack of what is built in into the browser. Because if you go back to the slide that I present, right? So what essentially makes a video call tick, let's go here, it is a conglomerate of stuff. You need to have the top-level API. You have to have the WebRTC API. You have to have protocols, media, signaling, auth. You need to have a phone book or a directory. And you need to have a server. What I showed just a moment ago is this portion, what you have here, connect to that, exactly that same portion from peer-to-peer, client-to-client. So it is impossible to connect currently from Chrome straight into Link server. But it is possible to connect from Chrome to Chrome. Is that clear? So you cannot do contact center, but you can essentially enable people talk to each other. Any more questions? Then herewith, thank you very much for coming, and speak to you at the conference.